Okay, Marcia, why don't we get started? Thank you everyone for coming. My name is Chris Bungie. I'm the president of Sober Kids BC. Really appreciate you all being here. This is our first live event. Yay. So thank you. Thank you for coming out and supporting us and supporting Marcia. So I'll just give you a little bit of background on the charity. So this is a charity that was started about a year and a half ago, officially by my wife and I and a few friends. And the purpose of this charity is to help BC youth to live better, free from substance use. And so how we accomplish that mission is by public education. We're going to have free talks such as this one with Marcia on an ongoing basis. And we hope to have free educational programs moving forward. So for those of you who have not done so, check out our website. There's lots of great content on there for parents and for teens as well. So before I introduce Marcia, I'll just run through the format for tonight. So first off, you might know that this is being recorded because it's a webinar, but I just want you to know that you're not being recorded as the attendees, right? It's just myself and Marcia who will be on the recording. And so if you do have questions for Marcia, if you think of a question while she's presenting, you can just enter it in the Q&A section. It's a webinar, so you'll see it's unlike a normal Zoom meeting. There's a Q&A section at the bottom. You can just punch in the Q&A section your question. And after the talk is over, I will stop the recording, and then you'll have the option of I can just read the question on your behalf, or if you want to, I can activate your screen and you can have a conversation with Marcia. I'll leave it up to whoever asked the question. And if anything comes up or you have anything that you want to point out as well, just go ahead and put it in the Q&A. Nobody else can see it. I can see it, and I can address anything that you want at that time. So the talk tonight will be for about 20 minutes with the Q&A afterwards. During the chat, I will put some information in the chat for attendees. If you want a copy of Marcia's book, you can email us your name and address, and we'll Sober Kids BC will send one to you for free. And I'll also put some information about Marcia in the chat as well while she's talking, so you can look up who she is and learn more about her during or after her presentation. So Marcia is joining us tonight from Waterloo, Ontario, and Marcia Van Winsberg is going to share her story about her own struggles with her family and her kids. She had teen boys who struggled with substance use disorder for a number of years. And Marcia actually wrote a book about that called When She Stopped Asking Why, which is a best-selling book, one of her seven publications. It's a great book. If you haven't read it, if you're a parent, I would encourage you to read it. It's really, really helpful. And, you know, what I really love about the book is it's not just so much about the kids. It's about her own personal journey through that. And, you know, I just as a parent myself, I thought it was really a great fountain of information for anybody who's raising kids, whether they have substance use issues or not. It was just a really, really inspiring book. So I'll talk about how I met Marcia initially. So a few years ago, my wife and I came up with the idea to start this charity, and both of us have you know, some experience with addiction in our families, myself, I have personal experience with it. And so we were just talking about, you know, what would be the best way we could help people in general, you know, in terms of dealing with substance use. And we got talking about it, and we sort of said, well, you know, every single person I know, you know, through my own journey and in our own families who've had issues, our own communities, you know, everyone we know, it started as teenagers. You know, like I can't name one single person I know. And I know I'm friends with a lot of people who suffer from addictions who started using after the age of 20. Okay. Like the majority of people that I know along the journey have started, you know, age 12, 13 in the teenage years, sometimes even younger. So we really wanted to do something that would, you know, help nip that in the bud as much as possible. We know it's impossible to stop it altogether, but we really wanted to do something for kids because we felt that there was a gap there. You know, we feel that, you know, there's a lot of really great resources now. Like it's, you know, addiction is becoming more of, more of not an elephant in the room. You know, like there's a lot of public education about it. We're talking about addiction as a disease publicly, and that's all great. But we sort of feel that kids are being left out of the equation, right? And so we would like our charity to sort of fill that gap and focus more on youth and educating families and teens to hopefully prevent some of these issues from becoming issues in the first place. So when we were building the charity, the one thing that we were missing was a parent who actually had a lived experience. You know, I knew other people who had been addicted, who recovered, but we were missing the resource of a parent who had gone through that. So I went on the internet just searching, like, you know, mother talking about her children with issues or mother dealing with kids with substance use. And Marcia's name came up from an old CBC article, maybe 5 or 6 years old. And it was based out of where Marcia lives in Waterloo, Ontario. And I read through the article and I was very inspired because, you know, the article was talking about how Marcia was sharing her story with people in her community about the struggle she had. And she was sharing it, so that she could help other parents and also other teens. And what I really liked about it was, you know, in my experience, usually when a family has addiction in it, it's like, you know, nobody wants to talk about it. It's like the big secret, like, you know, like nobody really, really discusses it until, you know, until it's a really, really significant issue. And what I found inspiring through Marcia's journey was that she was publicly talking about what happened with her and her family and their journey. And, you know, me personally, I felt really inspired by it. So I reached out to her and she's just been an incredible resource for us in terms of giving me guidance on how I should be talking to families and parents, because, you know, we have the academic research, we had that, but Marcia's been able to help us add the real personal touch of having someone who's been there and help us shape our materials, hopefully in a way that families will and kids will relate to a lot better. So we'll see how it goes. Anyway, I'm just really happy to have Marcia here tonight, and I'm going to stop talking and I'll turn the floor over to her, and she's going to talk to you for about 20 minutes. And like I said, if you do have questions while she's talking, please feel free to send the question to me in the Q&A and we'll address the question at the end. So Marcia, I'll turn it over to you, and here you go.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. First off, thank you for everything that you've done to bring this vision to life, because I've seen it in the works for a number of years, and I am honored to be here and to be sharing part of my story with you and what this journey has been like. So first off, thank you for that. Second, the book, and I think it's so generous and how what you're doing and sharing that. So I appreciate that. I really will get into my story a little bit more, but really wanted to become a resource for parents, because years ago, there was still very few people talking about this situation. And the other piece is that we assume it is only happening to certain families, and that is not the case. So I think the only way we can normalize some of this is if we actually start to have these kind of conversations. So I love what you're doing. I love that there's going to be free, you know, resources, education programs to support families, because these are all the things that were not available when we started on this journey. So tonight, what we're going to talk about is I'm going to give you some background in my story and what that experience was like. And we're going to talk a little bit about prevention and substance abuse and kids, addressing teens, the gap that's there, what maybe some things to watch for. Then we're going to talk a little bit about how to normalize these conversations around substances with our kids, and ideally know when it's time to have the conversation. It's always time to have the conversation. It is actually ends up usually by the time we wait for it to be comfortable, the conversation time window has passed. So it is always something that can be shared and have a conversation about. And I'm going to share a little bit of my story with it as well. And third is how to recognize when it does become an issue. And this can be for parents of all different ages. And maybe you're not in this window, but there will be something here that I believe will serve everybody in some way, shape, or form tonight. So that's what we're going to talk about when it comes to families, teens, and harmful substance abuse. When it comes to this, it really is a family disease. There's really no other way to say it. it impacts everyone and it affects everyone. And it was challenges that we walked through that I never saw coming. And I certainly wasn't prepared for, but I can look back and see how so many things happened as almost a perfect storm that led to this situation and what we were in. So tonight, I want to open up the conversation after when it comes to the Q&A, and I invite you to ask any questions that you might have. And if you don't get them answered tonight and you want to reach out, you can feel free to connect with me at any time. So if it's okay, I'm going to share a little bit of my story with you tonight. We found marijuana in our house probably about 12 years ago. Our kids were 12 and 13 at the time. Now, that was the first time that we found it. That doesn't mean that's the first time that it happened, but that was the first time that we found it. And people always say, well, how did it start? We found it in the house and we would get rid of it and be very clear on what was okay, what was not okay. And it would show back up days later, maybe days, sometimes the next day. And eventually it got to the point where it was this revolving door that it was showing up nonstop. And in this time, we were in this experience where I was, you know, trying to have conversations with other parents. And I am going to talk about that a little bit because I think this is an important piece. But I was having conversations with other parents and saying, like, do you know what's happening? And their majority of people would say, it's just a phase. They all do it. And that never settled with me, to be honest. That never set well with me. It didn't feel right to think it was a stage. Because again, I'm looking at my kids who are 12 and 13 at the time, and it didn't set right for me. But many people felt it was a stage and it was something that would just pass. And it didn't. It continued and it continued and continued to escalate. The amount escalated, the behaviors that went with it, the ways that it was impacting and affecting our family. We would have periods of time where they wouldn't come home. We couldn't find them. We were being the advocates that we could find a way to be. We were reaching out for support with schools, with any programs that we could find, which is very minimal at the time. But everything we could see with our kids was escalating. It just kept escalating and it was getting worse. And eventually there came a couple of turning points where it hit a point that it was impacting. They were not going to school. They were not coming home. We couldn't find them for days. And it was just, it didn't take long before it was like, this is actually a much bigger problem than us. But when you're advocating in this situation, you're dealing with minors. And I mean, speaking in Canada at this point, it was very challenging because most of the situations, most people felt that, you know, it's really not that big of a deal. They're still young. They can outgrow this. But I was watching them change, and watching their behaviors and who they were change was the red flag that this is serious, and this could become something much more serious. So a couple of key turning points was when we had a moment that we almost lost both of our boys only a few days apart. And when they both happened in our own home, that became the moment that I recognized that my way was not working and this was not helping and being quiet wasn't doing anything. And I just didn't know what to do anymore. I was actively looking for support outside of, you know, my circle. And I was really counseling and crisis and parent support groups. But it really did take a lot of navigating to find help. There was very little help available. And so I remember having an appointment with my counselor, and I said, no matter what is happening, people are not talking about these difficult stories. Like, I can't find any other parents. And again, take it back. This is 2013, 2014. And she said, maybe you could check on Facebook to see if there's a group. And I went into a Facebook group, and it was a group of moms who were dealing with teen substance abuse. And there was 100,000 moms in it. And that was a almost dropped to the floor moment that I went, this is not just me. And I had no idea it wasn't just me. And during this process, I said to my counselor that there still is not a lot of people talking about this. And I remember her saying, clear as a bell, that maybe that's because you're supposed to. And that started to spark something that, what if I could do something good with this? What if I could do something good and share the story and help others and be a resource to really show people, parents, that they're not alone. And that's where the journey started. And the CBC radio was one of my very first interviews. And at that time, very few people even knew what our story was. Well, I thought they did, but they did. And that was one of the first things that came from it. And it literally blew up is what happened. So our stories can really connect us to each other, and we can actually be a major source of resource for other people. So I am very passionate about helping people to learn how to show up and share their stories. And at the same time, do it and leave everyone else in integrity. Because as you're going to hear me share, and even in my book, I leave my kids in integrity because I share my story and not theirs. And so I want to talk a little bit as we start with prevention. And prevention is I actually struggle with this, being completely honest with you, because this is something I sat down with my husband. And I'm like, okay, can you help me with this? What do you think about prevention and what could we have done differently? And this takes us back to, we had a very good friend of ours ask, what is the one thing that you would like to go back and do differently? And this is a tough one because I do believe that we could go back and change every single thing that happened, how we responded, and we still might be in the exact same position that we are today because it's based on decisions that were outside of our control. So it's knowing that piece of what can I control and what can I do? And knowing what I know now, there are some of the different conversations that I wish that I would have had. Regarding prevention, I do believe that some kids are more susceptible and are more affected by substances. It doesn't have to be a traumatic situation. It doesn't have to be that your kids have come through major trauma and that's why they have turned to it. It doesn't have to be a mental health situation. All of those things can compound it. I look back and I think how my kids really struggled for a number of years in school, trying to fit in, we had a number of different things there, from high functioning Asperger's to dealing with mental health. And I firmly believe that substances, marijuana in the early stages, became a source of self-medicating. I really do. And I think that's why it served a purpose from a very young age. Did they go through anything traumatic for that to happen? No, not to my knowledge. And so I want to really speak on this piece of prevention and knowing that you can still do everything and you still might have some challenges. Because the one thing my husband said today, and it's a very true point, is that you are their primary source of influence until you're not. And there comes a point in time where their peers will become much more of an influence on them than parents. And this is the piece that I would love to normalize this conversation, that with prevention, be honest and recognize what is the prevalence of addiction in your own family? Because I'm going to talk a little bit about this later, but I believe right now the stats are that if you have addiction in your family, then 50%, your kids are 50% or more likely to also have that tendency for addiction and their response to substances. I think it's safe to say, we all understand that marijuana is not the same as what it was even 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It's not the same. And how they respond to it is not the same. And we're dealing with 12-year-old kids, and they're, you know, boys don't tend to mature in their brain development until the age of 25. So when they start to use at 12, it does affect them and it does have a different effect on them. So when it comes to prevention, I think one of the best things is really starting to normalize these conversations, which I'm going to drop into in a second, but is, how can you open up the dialogue and have conversations at a fairly early age? The other thing that is important to share here, I believe in prevention, and this is something I did not see coming, and so I'm openly sharing this, is as a family, being really clear on what your values are and what is important with your kids. So that is having this conversation about values and knowing what is important and recognizing that sometimes there can be this perfect storm that happens. So for us, we were in a situation where I would say good family, no real issues that we're aware of. Kids were very active in their sports, and we were surrounding ourselves around families that most people would say were good families. And so, which again, just a generalization, I want to paint a picture for you, but we were in a space at the age of 12 and 13 where a number of parents thought it made more sense to let their kids drink and smoke pot in their house because at least they knew where they were and they were safe. And if that's what you're going to do with your own kids, then fine, that's, but they would bring other kids into the house and they became the cool house to go to. So from a very young age, we had a number of situations where parents felt that that was normal to do. And my one son almost died from an alcohol poisoning at 14 because parents thought it was fine to serve him vodka and not say anything to us. And so this was, but never did I see that coming. So that was a conversation. And I actually did have a very open conversation afterwards saying, you can't make those decisions for my kids. You can make them for your own. But I do believe that exposure in that way, shape, or form from a young age certainly opened up doors for them. I really do. And so I think it's important when you're having conversations that you're also having conversations with other parents. You know, because you might have somebody right now who you know and trust with your kids, but when it comes to these kinds of topics, they might have very different beliefs. And so I would be opening up those kinds of conversations from as much as possible. So that will help with prevention and will help with potentially recognizing maybe some of the things that your kids are going to get into, because at least if you have more parents on board, you have a better chance of catching and recognizing what is happening. The other piece on prevention is that is not what any parent wants to hear, is that this is parenting is really an exercise in controlling what you can control. Right? I think we all know that it's an exercise in controlling what you can control. When they're younger, you see a child throwing a fit in the grocery store, and the first thing you do is you look at the parent. We all do it. We don't mean to do it, but we all do it. You look at the parent, and there is a point when they are younger that yes, parenting is 100% an effect on how kids behave. But there does come a point in time where our kids truly do have their own brains. They do have their own personalities, and we can still only control what we can control. So that's a big piece on prevention, is really doing the best that we can, not landing into a space of perfectionism and putting that pressure on yourself, but being very open with the dialogue as much as possible and recognizing that you can still only control as much as you can, but you can open up conversations, which takes me to the next piece on normalizing conversations and substances. So again, like I said before, research shows that like 50%, if you have a history of substance abuse in your family, then your kids are 50% more likely to also be genetically predisposed to it. And I didn't have that conversation. I didn't know that stat. I also grew up in a family where alcoholism was very much glorified, and it was something that we saw a lot of. And it wasn't until years later that I didn't understand this. And again, just being very real and honest with you, that I have a cousin who is an addictions counselor. And she pointed out to me that I was only equating alcoholism with violent or with a person in my family who really struggled and would get like very aggressive. But as she pointed it out, is that I could see the tendencies for addiction all the way through. I could see it in, you've got the one uncle who is happy, but wouldn't have dinner without five drinks. That's normal. And so I started to see it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, we are completely surrounded by it in my family. And I didn't see it. I wish I would have had that conversation earlier. I didn't know, and I didn't understand. And it wasn't something that my kids saw. They see it now, and we have very open conversations about it. But that is definitely something, is it's like kids don't get to pick their genes. And as one of my very good friends who is surrounded by addiction in her family, she was super close with us, watched all of it unfold, and her kids were younger at the time. And she said, how are you okay with if I have very open conversations with my kids about what you've gone through? And I'm like, absolutely. And she did. She had very open conversations. And what she used to say to her kids is that, and I'm just sharing this because I found it was very powerful and her kids responded well to it. She didn't hide what we were struggling with. She was very open with it. And she said that because of your family history, you are almost like a gun. You are locked and loaded. You get to decide what happens. You can go to a party with a friend. You can try pot. You might have a completely different reaction to somebody else. And that reaction might be that once you have it once, you'll do whatever you can to have it again. And I believe that that's how some of us are wired. She had that conversation. They had open conversations. Those kids talked to me about it on a regular basis. And I mean, I've watched how things have turned out differently there. So I do think there is room to have open conversations and being honest about your family's history or your history of substance abuse or addiction and how that shapes and what that looks like. These are not the conversations we like to have, but there's ways to have them, I think, with our kids. I think it's also fair to say that with substances, again, it doesn't affect all of our kids the same. It doesn't. I watched a number of their friends who it was a phase. It came in, they had it, they didn't care, and they went. For us, you know, as we talked about it, that we were younger and we drank. And exactly as Chris said, teens is where it starts. It's literally where it starts, especially as their brain is developing, that we would have, you know, we would drink when we were teens, but I would still, you know, come home on time. I was respectful. I still had a job. I had other things. It never crossed into that. And so for us, it was a completely different story. We didn't have that story. It went the other direction. So that's the other piece of it is that having those open conversations, and especially when it comes down to our kids and teens and their brain development and what's happening. And the thing that, I don't know the age on girls, I think it is younger, but boys being 25 when their brain is fully developed, when a teen starts with substance abuse from a young age, and I can speak specifically to marijuana, that their brain, and especially if it's a repeated use that they're doing, their brain is almost trapped in that stage of development. So they continue to grow, but their brain is in that trapped stage. So there was a number of years that I was looking at grown boys, but seeing like the behavior of a 12-year-old. And I didn't understand that until later. So I think there's ways to have those kind of conversation. It does interfere with brain development as well. And Chris said it on my podcast, which is a fantastic episode, but he shared how like 40% of all hospital visits in Canada with teens are due to cannabis. So that is a message that this is a problem, obviously a problem in Canada. And I'm just speaking about Canada right now. So how do you know that leads into, how do you know how to recognize when this is becoming an issue? I'm going to refer back to Chris's comment on the podcast, is that if your kids are using cannabis as teens, then it's an issue. If they are drinking regular, then it's an issue. We are not here to say that, you know, there's a morality piece to it or that we expect they're never going to do this, but how can we normalize these kinds of conversations earlier than later? And if you're wondering if it is an issue, it is an issue. I think that's the safest way to say with kids. What I can say, when we were in this situation, I mean, I became a very avid advocate and I felt like I was fighting all the systems. There's really no other way to say it. I really did feel like I was fighting all the systems. At that point in time, schools were passing them. They weren't even going to school and they were being passed. Police didn't have, they would not follow through. As my husband says it, that they had all of the rights, but no responsibilities. And we had all the responsibilities and we had zero rights. And so it was a really bit of a perfect storm that happened. So I started to really reach out and ask for help. And I did my best to keep the communication lines open. When we were dealing with this in schools, I was the person with the guidance counselor. I was at the school. I was not trying to hide that this was a problem. I was asking for help. We were doing parent groups. We were going into a number of different programs, trying to find answers and solutions. Because when you're dealing with something like this, and just based on numbers, there's going to be people who are even listening to this call who are going to be experiencing something. And I hope it is never like what we walk through, but you will be experiencing something. Is to know that parents are not alone in these challenges. These normalizing these conversations like we're doing tonight, like Chris is doing, like Sober Kids is doing, having these open forums, these conversations, these speakers, you start to realize how widespread of an issue this has become. And this is a space to be able to learn from each other and also recognize that you're not alone in walking through these challenges. So it is an issue. If you think it's an issue or you're wondering if it's an issue, it's an issue. That's how I would answer that question. And it is something that we can do our best with prevention. We can do our best with education. And it's going to come down to really staying open with conversations as much as possible and being very honest about family history, about how genetically predisposed some of our kids might be, and letting them know when it's a problem, when it's not. The other thing, when I talk about normalizing conversations, I didn't know it was a problem, so I couldn't have that conversation, but I wish I would have normalized that, you know, if you need me to come and get you at any time, I will come. I will come. That's not a problem at all. And so it is like, where can you look at some of the situations that maybe you can anticipate and open up conversations before you get there? And then at the same time, a debriefing and having the conversations afterwards as well. So be honest with your concerns. Be honest with your values, with your thoughts, with your kids' friends, their parents, and create as much as possible very safe, open, and conversations with your kids and with other parents. And the last thing I want to say on this that might not sound like it's tied to it, it is, as a parent, the better, the more you can take care of yourself, the more you can like keep putting yourself as a priority, make time for partners, because a united front on this is really important. If you have very different values on this, then I would encourage conversations sooner than later. My husband and I were very much the same on a number of these issues. It didn't mean it wasn't challenging. It didn't mean it wasn't hard to walk through, but that helped because it made it easier when we were dealing with challenges that we were very much on the same page. So opening up those conversations, even with your spouse early, as far as values and how would you like to handle this, is another important thing to do. So I hope that that has supported you tonight. And again, in my book, what I share is I share my journey as a parent, how I pretty much lost myself and had to find myself, take care of myself, build myself back up again, which actually helped me to continue to be the advocate, but also to rebuild relationships with my kids, which is worth its weight in gold. So I am very grateful for that. And I would love to open it up. If there are any questions that I can support you on tonight, I am absolutely here for it.
Thank you very much, Marcia. That was just wonderful. Really, really appreciate it. So yeah, thanks for opening up the floor to questions. So we do have one question from Wendy Leeper. So she's going to talk to you directly. So I'm going to
let her
talk and she can ask you a question. You guys can have a chat.
Perfect.
Hey there, Wendy. Just one sec. Oh, sorry. I'm going to activate her here. There we go. There she is.
Do you want to pause the recording just in case?
I'm going to pause the recording. Yeah. So I'll pause. So if anyone wants to ask questions, I'll pause the recording. So it'll all be anonymous. Okay.
Perfect.
What do you think?